Well, I mean, what's this with chapter 12? I mean, didn't I tell you already that the semester was over, that we were done with the class? Well, yes, I did, but we really aren't, and my apologies. We have gone through the most important, the most common and typical investments for the vast majority of us. And now we're ready to take a look at some things that really aren't investments. They're speculations, and we know that speculation is just a fancy word for gambling. So our first speculation will be stock options. There are others. And we'll start with a joke, which you may or may not get because you don't maybe know the first thing about options, other than they sound confusing, and indeed they are. But this is a joke that's attributed to Warren Buffett. At a very exclusive party, a high-class, finely clad woman slinked up to the CEO of a Fortune 500 company and said, "I will do anything, anything you want." The CEO flatly responded, "Reprice my options." Now, maybe you didn't catch the joke, but he's asking her to do something that she really doesn't have the power to do. He's asking her to make his options, what are they? We'll discuss that in this chapter, worth more than they currently are. So that's the joke. And so maybe you don't understand it now, but hopefully by the end of the time together in this chapter, you will. What, dear students, is an options contract? Kind of a silly name, options contract. An options contract is a security, that means it can be bought and sold, and it's financial in nature, that derives the holder the right, that gives the holder the right to buy or sell a certain amount of an underlying financial asset at a specified price for a specified period of time. Now, typically, options are written are based on stocks, but there are options on pretty much any financial investment. But we'll be using stocks throughout the presentation just because they're the most common and the easiest to deal with. So you're not actually buying the stock, folks. You're buying an option to buy the stock. You're buying the right, the ability to buy the stock. Or, to make matters worse, there are options to sell, which is the exact reverse of the option to buy. They're not investments. They are speculations, which means they're gambling, which we don't use that word gambling, but that's what we mean. They're contracts, not investments, between two speculators. There's two parties to the options contract. The buyer of the options contract gets the right to buy or sell the financial asset at a given price for a given period of time. And the seller of the options contract, the second party to the contract, must buy or sell the asset, typically a stock, according to the terms of the contract. So you see, there are two parties involved. One is buying the right to do something. They could either buy the stock, or whatever the security is, we'll be using stocks, or they could sell the stock. And the other party to the contract agrees, okay, yeah, I'll sell it to you or I'll buy it from you according to the terms of the contract. So there are two parties involved, and we'll discuss these in detail, but just do your best to keep that in your mind that you're really not dealing with the stock itself. We are buying something that allows us to either buy the stock. That's why they're called derivatives. They derive their value from some other asset. As we just said, slide number three, options contracts are part of a class of securities called derivatives. Derivatives are securities, which means they can be bought and sold, and they're well-regulated. Some people would say they're not well-regulated, but yes, there's a regulatory authority that watches over the buying and selling of these things. Are securities that derive their value from the price behavior of an underlying real or financial asset. And again, we're going to discuss stocks for this chapter, but there are options on many other financial assets. Options contracts have no voting rights, receive no dividends, no interest, and they eventually, poof, disappear. They eventually expire. Their value comes from the fact that they allow the holder, the buyer of the option, to participate in the price behavior of the underlying asset with a much lower capital outlay. And by the way, it's really hard to say options contracts or just option contract, options contract. So what people do is just refer to them as options. Okay, so if you hear options or options contract, you're basically dealing with the exact same thing. Options allow an investor to leverage the outlay of capital. There's that word again, leverage. It's the ability to obtain a given equity position at a reduced capital investment, thereby magnifying your returns and magnifying your losses. With options, you can make the same amount of money from a stock or other security, and we'll just deal with stocks, as if you bought it for full price, but only come up with 1/10 or 1/20 or less of the money. Wait a minute. Sounds too good to be true. Well, you're right, it is. It is too good to be true. Much of the time, you lose your entire outlay. Options have a time limit. They don't, like a stock, last forever or until the company goes belly up, or like a bond, which is good for 10, 20, 30 years. No, most options expire 3, 6, 9 months, and most options expire worthless. Sounds like a great deal, doesn't it, so far? What's the rationale for options? Instead of buying a stock, you buy an option to buy a stock, or an option to sell a stock. Everything's in reverse, but it's the same idea. If the stock goes up, your option will go up almost always much, much faster than the stock. And then you can sell the option for a handsome profit, or you could exercise the option and actually go ahead and buy the stock. There's only one catch. The options contract expires in 3, 6, or 9 months. If the stock does not go up, the option is worthless. Most options expire worthless. Surprise? There are some scenarios where options can be worthwhile, but dear students, they are few and far between. Options have limited appeal to prudent long-term investors. Like you and me. Buying and selling options is speculating, gambling. Okay, so you're probably thinking, Payano, why are you even teaching us this? Look, we teach people about syphilis so that they don't go out and get syphilis. Do you understand? We teach them to protect themselves against getting syphilis or any other disease. And the same thing is true of options. We are teaching you options, first of all, because it's an introduction to investments class. And secondly, because you are now the investment guru for your friends, family, and coworkers. And one of them is going to come up to you and say, hey, I just saw that I can make a ton of money buying and selling options. What do you think? And you're going to tell them what I'm telling you, that it's a loser's game. That is a speculation. It is not an investment. Got it? Good. So let's take a look at our first options. Options contracts example. You look at a stock that's selling for $20, and you know you think it's a good company, so you buy a share of stock for $20. Now, what happens if the stock goes up to $30? Woo! That's a 50% return on your investment, isn't it? You earned $10 on a $20 investment. Well, that's not good enough. No, 50% is not good enough. Instead, you buy an options contract to purchase a share of the stock at $20, currently selling at $20. You didn't buy the stock, you bought an option to buy the stock. And that might only cost you $1 instead of $20. If the stock goes up to $30, your options contract probably, the price will probably go up to about $11, depending on how much time is left before the option expires. So you've earned $10 on a $1 investment. That's leverage in action, dear students. Congratulations. Pat yourself on the back. You didn't get a 50% return. You got a 1,000% return. You turned $1 into $10. Woo. But, slide 7, what if the stock price stays at $20? your options contract expires, worthless at the end of 3, 6, 9 months, depending on how long you purchased it for. And of course, after your options contract expires, the stock price zooms to $40 because you were so correct about that stock. You were so sure that this stock was going to hit the big time, and you were absolutely right, but because you bought an option that expired, you lost the ability to share in the success of the stock. So my advice, forget about the option and just buy the stock. But since this is an introduction to investments class, we need to become proficient in the concepts, terms, and techniques of options. Oh, do we? Folks, if you're taking the class, you're going to take the final exam. There are only a few more than a few questions, but I'm going to give you all the questions, all right? I'm going to give you all the questions about options. So if it's the end of the semester, which it is, and you're really, really tired and exhausted, and you really don't want to go through these presentations, just study the exam questions and find the answers for them and get ready to take the final exam. There are no calculations on the exam for options. There's an options worksheet, but if you go through that, you'll see that I tell you, you really don't need to go through that for the final exam. You really only need to go through that if you plan on taking the Series 7, because those questions are tricky. The questions about options are tricky. But anyway, this is an introduction to investments class. We're teaching about options, not so you'll use them, so that you'll be prepared to tell others why they are horrible places to put your money. There are two main types of options, and we've been hinting at this, and now we're ready to give them their names. The call option and the put option. And usually people just say call. They don't say call option. They just say call, and they don't say put option. They say put. A negotiable instrument, a call option, is a negotiable instrument that gives the buyer of the option the right to buy the underlying security at a stated price within a certain period of time. That first example that we just went through the last few slides, that's a call option. And when people talk about call options, when they talk about options, if they don't say call or put option, they usually mean a call option. That's what they're usually referring to. If they say put option, then they're talking about a put. And what's a put? It's the exact opposite. It's an option, but it's a negotiable instrument, a security, a contract, that gives the buyer of the option the right to sell the underlying security at a stated price within a certain period of time. So you see, the definitions are exactly the same except for the words buy and sell. The put option is the opposite of the call option, a mirror image. The right to buy is a call option. The right to sell is a put option. I know it's confusing. Where did the terms call and put come from, and how will I remember which is which? Well, the term call comes from the idea that when you buy a call option, you get the right to call the stock away from the seller of the option. Remember the call provision of bonds? It allowed us to, well, not us, it allowed the corporation or the municipality or the federal government has never issued callable bonds, but allowed them to call away the bonds from us, the investors. That's the same thing that's true here. We're going to call the stock away from the person on the other side of the contract. The term put comes from the idea that when you buy a put option, you get the right to put the stock to somebody. You get to sell it to them. So you get the idea? A call allows you to call away the stock. You're going to buy it from them. And a put option allows you to put the stock to someone. You're going to sell it to them. And so let's take a look at each one in detail. The two parties of a call option. Now, folks, there's a handout on the website and in Canvas that you might want to print out or just call up on the screen. But there's also going to be a graphic on the next slide, so maybe you just want to wait or just move to the next slide if you're following along. The buyer of the call option contract is the person who will do the calling away. The call option buyer is the person who will buy the stock. They buy the right to call the stock away from the call seller. But that's why it's called an option. You don't have to exercise that right. In fact, often you don't. Often the options contract expires worthless because it just doesn't make sense to call it away from them. The price isn't high enough. The seller of the call option contract, on the other hand, is the person who must sell the stock. It will be called away from them. Now, here's just to make things more complicated than they really are. The seller is also called the writer or the maker. So you'll hear all three used interchangeably. The call seller, the call writer, the call maker. They all mean the same thing. And you're going to hear people say, I wrote a covered call. I wrote a call. I sold a call. I made a call. The call option seller is the person who must sell the stock if the call option buyer exercises the stock. If they never exercise the right to buy the stock, then you don't have to sell it. You get to keep the money you received, and the option expires worthless. The call option seller is legally bound to sell the stock to the call buyer if the call option buyer exercises the option. In return, they're going to get that option price. Remember the dollar we talked about? The seller, that's why they're called the seller, they get that dollar. That's their piece of the action that they get out of the deal. Got it? Let's take a look now at a slide that asks why. You know, what is the call option buyer hoping for? What's the call option seller hoping for? Well, the call option buyer is hoping that the price of the stock will go up. See, a call option buyer is bullish. Remember we said the stock we bought went from 20 to 30? We were thinking the stock was going to go up. If the call option buyer has a call option to buy at 20 and the price zooms up to 30, they can exercise that option and buy the $30 stock for only 20 bucks. Pretty good deal, right? What is the call option seller hoping for? Well, the call option seller is hoping that the price of the stock will go down or at least stay the same, not go up a whole lot. They'd prefer it goes down because then they won't exercise it at all if it's below that price. A call option buyer is bearish or at least not very bullish. If the stock stays around 20 bucks or goes down, the call option buyer will not want to exercise the option and it will expire worthless. And as we said, the call option seller gets to keep the price of the option. No matter what happens, that's their money. That's their piece of the action. So here's a graphic. We got Ed and Ted. See, there's two parties of the call option contract. The call option buyer wants the price of the underlying stock to go up. He's bullish. No matter what happens to the price of the stock, he can buy it away, he can call it away from the call seller at $20. The seller, on the other hand, wants the price to go down or at least stay the same, stay around 20 bucks, because then he doesn't lose very much. He's bearish. No matter what happens to the price of the stock, he must sell it to the call option buyer if the option is exercised. In either case, he gets to keep that option price. So Ed pays a dollar for the option. Ted gets that dollar. It goes into his account. And the call option contract is tied to the underlying stock at the call price. It's also called the exercise price or the strike price. And the call option itself is a security. So it's going to bounce up and down as the price of the stock bounces up and down. And neither of them has to wait until the expiration date. They can close out the contract. Ed could turn around and sell his call option to somebody else. And Ted could close out the transaction. It's a little tricky how they do that, but he basically buys a call option from somebody else. And so that takes him off the hook. You know, somebody else is that now. Has the risk of the stock going up. So neither of them has to wait until the exercise date. They can turn around and sell their options, it's called closing out the transaction. It's a little tricky, but if you're going to do it, you're going to learn it. So don't worry. If you're going to start buying and selling options, you're going to learn how to do it. Your brokerage firm is going to show you the method that you do that. Okay. So the two parties now of the put option are very, it's the same idea, the exact same idea. A put option is the exact same idea of a, as a call option, but instead it's a, an option to sell. So everything is in reverse, but it's the same idea. The buyer of the put options contract is the person who will do the putting to. They buy the right to sell the stock to the put option seller, to put it to them. Again, they don't have to exercise that right, and remember that most options expire worthless. The seller of the put options contract, the option writer, the option maker, is the person who must buy the stock. It'll be put to them. The put option seller is legally bound to buy the stock from the put option buyer if the put option buyer exercises the option. And in return, they get that option price from the put option buyer. That's their piece of the action, as I've been using the term. So let's move to the next slide. And what is the put option buyer hoping for? Well, the put option buyer is hoping that the price of the stock will go down. A put option buyer is bearish. They want the price of the stock to go down because then they can sell it to the put option seller for a higher price than what it's selling for at the current market price. If a put option buyer has a put option to sell the stock at $20 and the price plummets to $10, well, whoopee, he can still sell it, a $10 stock, for $20. Not a bad deal, right? If the put option seller, what is the put up? But of course, if the price goes up, the option is going to expire worthless because he's not going to sell it a stock for higher than what the current market price is. That wouldn't make, I mean, for lower than what the current market price is, that wouldn't make any sense at all. Say the stock price went up to 25. He's going to sell for somebody for 20 and it's selling for 25 now. He would let the option expire worthless. What is the put option seller hoping for? The put option seller is hoping that the price of the stock will go up or at least stay the same. So a put option seller is bullish or at least not very bearish. If the stock stays around $20 or goes up, the put option buyer will not want to exercise the option and it will expire worthless. And again, the put option seller gain is limited to the price of the option. So if we take a look at the same graphic, except everything is in reverse now, here's the buyer, but he has the ability to sell the stock. He wants the stock to go down. No matter what happens to the price of the stock, he can sell it to the put option seller for $20, whereas this guy now has to buy it at $20, where before in the call he sold it at $20. The put option seller wants the price of the underlying stock to go up. He's bullish. No matter what happens to the price of the stock, he must buy it from, it will be put to him, the put option seller for $20, if the option is exercised, which often options are not exercised. We set the put price, the exercise price, also called the strike price, at $20. And this Fred on the left, the put option buyer, paid a dollar for that option. Ned gets that dollar, the put option seller. And the put option contract is tied to the underlying stock, which bounces up and down. And of course, the option will bounce up and down. It will vary up and down as the stock varies. The price of the put option will vary up and down as the stock option does. I'm sorry, as the stock price varies up and down. The price of the option will vary up and down. If the stock price, you know, goes up dramatically, if it's a call, the option will go up dramatically. If the stock price goes down dramatically, the put option price will go down dramatically. So, did that confuse you yet? Yeah, no. It's time for questions on options. Options are confusing, aren't they? Oh, yeah. No, options are one of the toughest, hardest parts of the Series 7 stockbroker exam. And if you're going to take the Series 7 stockbroker exam, just you contact me or your brokerage firm will give you plenty of materials, educational materials. But take them seriously because they're going to ask you. And if you, on the Series 7, there are, you know, like, 6, 7, or 8 parts of the Series 7, I don't remember. You don't know that. You're just answering questions as they come along. But you have to get 70% on all the different parts. And options is one of them. Options contracts is one of the parts of the exam. So when people fail the Series 7 on the first try, it's usually because they did not take options seriously And then later on, we'll discuss buying on margin and shorting. Same thing. They didn't take these things seriously, and they thought they could wing it, and no, you got to know it. You got to know. Because what happens is if you zig when you should have zagged, you get a different number, and of course that number is one of the choices on the exam. Options sound like gambling. Am I right? You're absolutely right. Options are a form of gambling. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody wins, somebody loses. Whereas stocks are open-ended, right? Everybody can win with stocks now. Everybody doesn't win with stocks. But the idea is that the economy expands and stocks do well, and yeah. But not options. Options are gambling. A family acquaintance once called me and said, "Hey, Frank, I can hear you can make a lot of money investing in options." I said, wait a minute. You can make a lot of money. You can also lose a lot of money. But you can't invest in options. You can speculate in options, but you cannot invest in something that has a 60% chance of being worthless in 3 months. That's not investing. It's speculating, which we know to be a fancy word for gambling. Now, I keep saying that most options expire worthless, right? The problem with that saying, with that sentence, is that the numbers vary depending on who you're talking to. From as little as 10% of options expire worthless, which is total BS, and that comes from the folks who are selling you, who are facilitating the transactions, the options exchanges who want you to buy and sell options because every time you do, they make money, to as high as 90% from people who don't want you to engage in options, and that number is way too high. Most reasonable numbers come in at a 55, 65% level. About 60% or a little bit more often than not, the option expires worthless. So that's why we say most options expire worthless. So hopefully you've been scared away and confused. Hopefully you haven't been confused, but it's just part of learning about options. It usually takes about 2 or 3 times of going through this presentation before you actually get it right, or you figured it out in your head, because it twists your head around. I like to think of a mirror. I don't know if that helps, but a espejo, you look in a mirror and say you're trying to, I have a, goatee that I work on with the scissors, and you got to be careful because you go one way, you think you're going the other way, you wind up stabbing yourself. And the same thing is true with options and call options and put options. You go one way and you think you're going the other way, and it gets very confusing. So, but if you are so inclined, I mean, if this is piquing your interest, or maybe you want to take the Series 7, I certainly hope you go on to the next presentation. But remember, the questions on the final exam for options are going to be on the website for you to study. But in our next presentation, we'll take a look at some of the aspects, some of the characteristics of options. And some people love to gamble. And this is a way you don't have to go to Las Vegas. You could sit in your bathrobe and buy and sell options and hopefully not lose your shirt. See you at our next presentation when we look at some of the aspects and characteristics of options.